Coming up with This Week in Computer Hardware, more Radeon 3000 updates, SSD price worries, another new Switch, this time with more battery life. Amazon Prime Days went huge, and the ultimate headphone stand does everything. All that and more coming up next on Twitch.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twitch.
This is Twitch, This Week in Computer Hardware, episode 525, recorded on July 18th, 2019. Has Radeon 7 gone to Radeon Heaven? This episode of This Week in Computer Hardware is brought to you by Mint Mobile. Mint Mobile provides the same premium network coverage you're used to, but at a fraction of the cost because everything is online. To get your new wireless plan for $15 a month and to get the plan shipped to your door for free, go to mintmobile.com/twitch. Welcome to Twits, This Week in Computer Hardware, Twits weekly show, where you get to see me, Patrick Norton, go through puberty a second time, or at least my voice, which is just absolutely trashed. Fortunately, I don't think you're here for the mellifluvious tones of my usual voice. I think you're here for the hardware news, and we have a bit, a touch, a smidge. Sebastian Peake joins me from beautiful Michigan.
Yes.
A northern
state. Pure Michigan, I think. I don't think it's called Pure Michigan anymore. That might be off the signs. I don't know what their current campaign is. I don't know why a state needs an ad campaign, but yes, I'm in Southwest Michigan.
Well, they need
Michigan.
Ad campaigns to bring more people to the state to increase property values in Detroit and the tax base. Okay. Pure, I don't think I ever saw that one. What was the, Whether you are traveling with your family or making memories with your friends, you're on the brink of planning a vacation so unique it can only be classified as, wait. Where'd it go? Where'd it go? Pure Michigan.
Oh, still what is. Okay.
Be? Well, at least at the Michigan.org official travel and tourism website. This, however, is not a website about travel, even in places as delightful. And I like Michigan, by the way. I'm actually not snarking. Pure Michigan. I was delighted to find out there was actually a Ryzen 7 chip for sale. I got an email for. Oh, go ahead. Pull Michigan back up. You're watching the video, please.
It's like San Francisco, Patrick. We've got a bridge. We've got a big bridge too. It's famous. It goes out to Mackinac or the Upper Peninsula. I'm sorry. It passes Mackinac. it starts at Mackinac
like
City.
Seen a map.
Hey, I've been there and I've crossed the bridge and I was terrified the entire time that I was going to blow off, even though I was in a 3,000 pound car.
It gets a little windy up there when it gets windy, to say the least. I got an email this morning that, delightfully enough, they had Ryzen 3700X processors in stock again at Newegg. Those are the 8-core 3.6 gigahertz version that sell for a delightful $330. They also have the 3800X for $399. And last I checked, there is still no sign of Ryzen 9 3900Xs, which are looking to be selling at $500. And, of course, the 3950 is not supposed to show up till September. So availability is kind of trickling in and out. And if you're looking for one, the best thing is to do a watch for it at your favorite website. That 3800 is almost tempting. And then I think, 3.6 gigahertz, 3.9 gigahertz. 105 watts versus 65 watts. And my real question, of course, is how overclockable is the 3700X? And we won't really have an answer to that until we have functioning 570 motherboards. Any update on that?
Well, I haven't done, I think it's on the list somewhere. There was some AGESA 1.0.0.3 versus 1.0.0.2 testing. And I think the consensus at this point, by the way, is that we're talking about almost margin of error differences in performance, but there are some slight differences. But as far as the motherboards go, it's kind of vendor specific at this point, whether the BIOS has been updated to the absolute latest version. I think everybody's already rolled out that combo update with the newest AGESA code. But are there memory issues still outstanding? Is it vendor dependent for some of that? Probably some of the boards, like the one behind me, required some manual intervention. I couldn't just plug in the XMP. value and get it to the same point that it was even on my X470 board. So sometimes, if I mean, especially people who are just upgrading an existing system, you might be better off in these early days sticking with that X370 or X470 board if you don't really need PCIe 4 and, you know, other than straight line speed from those E16-based Phison controller. Well, I have one. Unless you need one of these PCIe 4 SSDs for that straight line speed, everything else that this does is pretty much the same as a Gen 3 drive. So maybe you don't need an X570 board, but don't listen to me. I'm sure manufacturers would rather you go out and buy that X570 board along with that new CPU, but you might have to wait a little bit for some really mature firmware before it has all of the promise fulfilled. Is that a long enough answer to your question?
Yeah, no, it was a great answer. I found while you were doing that, I double checked Newegg and took a look at Amazon for the up to the minute results, which will be, of course, available probably after all of them have been sold out. But going up to Amazon, the 2700X is a solid $248.29 down from the original or the earlier price of $329. The 3700X is selling for $329. They have their 3800X for $399 also. Well, technically 99 cents less than Newegg. And if you scroll down, scarcity is definitely the watchword for the 3900X because if you're comfortable with paying $828.63 to somebody you don't know for that part, you could attempt to buy it. Or you could just go to eBay.
You know what? The 3900X reminds me of the launch of the original iPhone in 2007, where you'd have to go into your Apple store in the morning and hope they had new stock, or they introduced this stock checker thing, but they wouldn't ever tell you how many they had, how many each store was getting. And if you really wanted one that summer, you ended up paying somebody $200 or $300 premium on eBay to get it for the first few weeks. And that's kind of what this is. It's like, yeah, they theoretically exist at retail price somewhere at some time, but whoever has the inside info buys it as soon as it is listed, and then 5 seconds later you visit the site and it's gone. It's like a hot console launch. It's like the Nintendo Wii when it first came out, and I was working in retail at that time, and there were people who would call about every 5 minutes every day. Do you have any of the Wii? Do you have the Wii? Do you have the Wii in stock? And if we got it, I wasn't allowed to hold it for anybody. And then we'd have 12 people lined up because somebody told somebody that there were some in the back room. And
oh, man. Well, I mean, now in stock.net would be an option for that.
Yeah.
So, although it seems to be completely overwhelmed with Microsoft Xbox One and Nintendo Switch offers. I'm just not even going to go down that particular rabbit hole. But so processors are available except at the extreme high end. I asked you before the show in part because I keep circling that buy now button for a Ryzen 7 processor. And I have to be honest with you, I'm now starting to really think about the 3700 instead of the 3800. And if I do that, of course, it means the 3800 will be vastly more overclockable or do vast more amounts of work. So feel free to wait until after I purchase it to make your own purchase. But just to emphasize what you said last week, Ryzen memory, Ryzen 3000 is not as dependent on memory performance or memory speed as the previous generation of Ryzen processors.
Yes.
Okay.
Or rather, it is not. I agree. I mean, it was completely dependent, really, from CCX unit to CCX unit, those internal... Mm-hmm. What basically showed up in Windows is NUMA nodes, and I don't think they ever actually came out and said they were NUMA nodes, but separate processor nodes that were then communicating with each other over your memory bus. So the fastest memory you could throw at the system, the better. I think it was it capped at 4 gigahertz? I'm not sure, but there were all sorts of tests that proved it. There was like the ping testing and all that stuff. And I'm sure Intel was very happy at that time because in certain workloads, you could really see the effects of that added latency from CCX unit to CCX unit, and that's just not the case. They basically address that and have it communicating internally, and So yeah, faster memory does make your system faster, and you're going to see some memory scaling, but you don't have that huge penalty if you're not running really fast RAM. Although we've gone from the nominal RAM speed with the previous generation being 2400, and it would support higher speeds, but it was a little bit more touchy about what RAM you use, and there were favorites out there of like what was considered the best, like which Samsung die has the is the best for Ryzen overclocking. B die,
terrible B-die. Flashbacks.
Yeah, but now it's just, hey, get some memory. Most the promise of X570 is in part not just PCIe 4, but kind of anything goes with RAM. Like to throw RAM in, it's just going to work. I've had my own struggles with that, as we discussed, but I mean, it's still better than it was, and you're gonna see memory scaling, like with Intel processors. I've had the misfortune of reviewing memory before, and you start tearing your hair out. Like, how am I gonna show any difference at all between these speeds? And it's like I can do compression or decompression testing. You know, games don't really show anything unless you're using integrated graphics and so on and so on. But you know,
so there's
it
that
makes a difference. Yeah, it makes a difference. It's not as big of a difference anymore, which is nice. Makes it's sense. Kind of on the level playing field with Intel now.
I like that thought. That's a gentle way of putting it. Radeon 7, the darling or the confusing GPU that AMD announced. We expected the AMD announcement CES to be all about Ryzen 3000. Ryzen 3000 was kind of the just one more thing, kind of, but later this year, which of course turned out to be July. There's a rumor, nice write-up on Tom's Hardware, from French media outlet Kaukotland, that AMD Radeon 7 graphics card has reportedly reached the end-of-life status, i.e. they ain't making no more. By Ji Liu up on Tom's Hardware. And then, of course, AMD responded, confusing the matter. You know, it's kind of an affordable professional card that had a lot of graphics, gaming push on it. You know, and when you look at the 5700 numbers, the Radeon 7 looks kind of silly for anything other than a particular subset of professional users, right? Because the Radeon 7 still selling for $700. The 5700 XT is like less than 5% behind it in performance and sells for $399. Who needs the extra $300 in Radeon 7? Not gamers. I think it's kind of the short version of that.
I love their reply too. Like AMD's official response to Tom's Hardware is that we continue to see strong availability of Radeon 7 in the channel for both gamers and creators. Okay, what does that exactly address as far as whether it's EOL or not? Because
that's
day,
a fancy way of saying
buy one.
You know, and one way you could say that is that nobody's buying these, so there's a ton of availability, so we're not making anymore because all of our resellers are pissed off. That's the official snarky this week in computer hardware interpretation of that. But they explicitly didn't say it was end of life. They said there's a whole lot of them out there, which is a really weird response. It's not. It can't be end of life. We haven't sold out of them. I can't be overdrawn. I still have checks in my checkbook. You know what I mean?
It's analogy, that kind of logic. Yes. I mean, that day when I was looking into this story, there was still one being sold on Newegg. It was an ASRock branded one because, of course, there were no custom versions of this card. And that one had been discounted to $669. It was gone right away. And all of the listings on Amazon have been third party with a big markup. And the only place I can find it at $699 is from AMD.com directly. And they're sold out of their 50th anniversary version, the one with the red shroud. So maybe you can still buy it from AMD today. I don't know why you would. Like you said, Navi is so much faster per... I'm trying to frame this. Like it only has 40 of these compute units. So the streaming processor count is far lower with the fastest Navi part we currently have, which is the 5700 XT. $400. Still a great gaming card and comes far too close to Radeon 7 levels of performance to justify spending, you know, $300 or so, $250 to $300 more on the Radeon 7, unless you need all of that fast HBM2. And this is still a great...
Right.
Like, they've emphasized content creation. Well, yeah, it's a great content creation card. And it's probably the ultimate Hackintosh card if you can get it working on your Mac rig. And think about it, the new Mac Pro, like, this chip will live on. If you're sad about the possibility that this Vega 20 chip is being discontinued, well, it's not, because Apple has slapped two of them on each of these Vega 2 GPUs that you can put into your Mac Pro and just go crazy with 128 units. And I don't even know how much. I thought it was more memory per die with Vega 2. Maybe it's 64, not 32. Or what am I thinking?
Right.
32 instead of 16, so 64 total. But we'll double check that. But it does live on in the Mac where it belongs. I mean, this is like your OpenCL compute powerhouse, and that's what Mac users need, because that's what Apple desires, because they will not work with NVIDIA.
But they're consistent about it, so that means something. Jeremy Hellstrom has a title that I feel incredibly compelled to discuss up on PC Purr. Quote, SSD manufacturers uniting against Ryan's Law. Of course, Ryan's Law being Ryan Schrout's delightful demand that SSD prices drop down to 10 cents a gigabyte. I was literally staring at non-NVMe drives in a Best Buy last night that were literally pennies within Ryan's Law, like 2 terabyte drives for under $200. I laughed. I cried. It became a part of me. Jeremy cautions that this is a rumor. Quote, though history suggests a grain of truth is likely to emerge. Flash memory and controller makers and distributors such as ADATA and Phison seem to think it likely that flash memory prices will soon start to creep upwards. As there is crossover between those who make the memory and those who sell the finished products, that prediction could well be self-fulfilling. But think 10 to 15% price increase with the release of PCI Express 4.0 SSDs. Quote, Taiwan memory module makers, including ADATA Technology, Phison Electronics, and Team Group, are mulling a 10 to 15% hike in SSD prices and enforcing a limited supply policy amid growing expectations that both NAND flash and DRAM prices may rebound.
I like that. You know, I like the growing expectations. Growing expectations that we want to make more money. So in anticipation of that, we will raise the prices and then see if we do indeed make more money.
Well, you know, people get to eat. You know, that's I've true. Been enjoying the reduced, although not anywhere near the bottom prices on memory, and SSD prices have dropped considerably and have been dropping for quite some time. So this may be a way of saying, if you're thinking about buying an SSD, go ahead and buy that SSD, because it's probably not going to get any cheaper in the near future. Just something to think about if you've been sitting on the fence. And if you haven't priced SSDs in a while, they're about as cheap as they get or have gotten, which I'm delighted. You picked up on this. I was looking at this also. There's not the new Switch that we talked about last week, the portable-only non-television dockable Switch, but there right. looks like there's going to be a design change or a single significant improvement to the existing Switch.
Right. Well, it's the new Switch, but it, you know, the new Nintendo Switch is not the Nintendo Switch Lite. It's just the new Nintendo Switch, which will probably just be called the Nintendo Switch. Or maybe they'll do like they did with the new 3DS when they literally put new before the name, and then all the listings had to say new before Nintendo 3DS. And so it was a period of time where that was incredibly confusing. And one of the main features of the new 3DS, if you don't remember, was that it didn't come with an AC power adapter anywhere in the box. Right. You had to supply your own, which they expected you to have, because who wouldn't have one already? I mean, that was such a successful product. But this, as far as I know, still does come with a charger in the box, I hope, and a dock. It's just, as The Verge was speculating, it might have improved specifications. They never announce things like this. Nintendo is very close right. to the vest on what's inside. So I'll have to wait till somebody tears this thing down and shows me exactly if it's the same Tegra chip that was in the previous one, or if it's a revision maybe on a smaller node? Is this how they're getting their extra battery life, or is it a big battery that's being added to it with the same chassis design? Maybe they've done some PCB changes inside, but they're saying it's going to have improved battery life. So maybe that means different storage and CPU. I don't know.
Maybe.
Maybe I should study like FCC filings to see if I can find it in there. But
sounds like a plan.
Yeah.
I have all the FCC filings.
Yeah.
I laugh because I was trying to figure out an issue with a set of true wireless earbuds, and I ended up searching Chinese websites till I found the manufacturer's link to the certification to find the chipset that was listed for the FCC. So I feel your pain in not wanting to search through FCC listings, but it's always kind of amazing what you find when you dig through those.
Like, I actually been able to identify some of these random old expansion cards that I have for these old computers, like 386 era right. systems. It's like all you can do is look at the FCC ID that's on the PCB and hope that you can identify what it is and if a driver exists for it. If you're crazy enough to play with old computer hardware like I do.
Well, I'm just not even going to touch that right now. Because okay. It's a nice and delightful hobby, and it keeps things out of landfills. True. It's good. I just want to hit this before we delve into thanking our sponsor for this episode of This Week in Computer Hardware. There's a wonderful summary of this up on TechMeme, and I'm going to quote that here. Unwarranted health fears about wireless technology can be traced to a scientist's flawed report in 2000 that failed to account for the shielding effect of human skin. How one scientist and his inaccurate chart led to the unwarranted fears of wireless technology. And this is actually kind of fascinating because a long time ago in Techzilla, we had a viewer like, should I be afraid of using a cell phone? And we were kind of like, not really, unless you use it like 24 hours a day and put it inside of your skull. And what was fascinating is we got this amazing email from a physics professor at a major research institution. And he was like, you know, here's the amount of radiation you get from standing in sunshine. Here's the amount of radiation you get from your cell phone. With all due respect, you really need to worry a lot more about the sun. And, you know, in kind of the order of magnitude kind of way. But if you go to this article up in the New York Times, 2000, Broward County Public Schools in Florida, they have like 250,000 students. They want to put in laptops and wireless networks. In 2000, this was pretty progressive. They went to a consultant and physicist, and the response was that wireless technology was, quote, likely to be a serious health hazard. And he found this large graph where he noted microwave absorption in brain tissue and in parentheses, gray matter. Look at that. So the graph, if you're watching the video, is supposed to be showing tissue damage, how it increases as radio wave frequencies go up, i.e. the stuff 5G is running at is going to be a nightmare. But the key takeaway is that, quote, it failed to account for the shielding effect of human skin.
Sounds like an excuse from Big Wireless to me, Patrick.
Yeah. Quote, according to experts on the biological effects of electromagnetic radiation, radio waves become safer at higher frequencies, not more dangerous. Not, you know, x-rays and stuff, but when you're talking about, radio kind of level stuff. Yeah, he didn't realize that skin blocks higher frequencies. And they've got quotes from a professor of radiology at New York University. It doesn't penetrate. Temple University emeritus professor of medical physics. Because Dr. Ziskin at Temple University School of Medicine, he's the emeritus professor of medical physics. He spent a lot of time studying about high frequencies and if they could, quote, sow illness. And the experiments basically support the safety of high frequency waves. There are some questions about whether there are not or whether there are health effects. Of course, that is coming from Mr. Curry, I should say Dr. Curry, who forgot to account for skin blocking high frequency waves. But it's an interesting read. And, you know, it explains where a lot of the fear, uncertainty, and doubt around some of this stuff came from. So we wait with bated breath. I also got to say, you know, if you're watching the video, you saw a sort of flash of 5G. The charts labeled, you know, 5G's place in the spectrum. And if you look at 5G, it's everywhere from radio wave up into some really high frequency stuff. I have to be honest with you. I'm very curious to see how a lot of the high frequency stuff actually behaves in the real world, because I just think the range on it is going to be even shorter than they're predicting. But that is a subject we'll get into as 5G actually rolls out in a more meaningful fashion in the United States. So I just thought that was great. Forgot to account for skin. Skinless humans in terrible danger of high frequency radio wave cancer. So if you are currently functioning without a skin, which would make you a medical miracle of the highest order, and of great interest to people running burn wards, please contact us so we can get you some sort of covering. This episode of This Week in Computer Hardware is brought to you by Mint Mobile. I love wireless resellers. I love saving money on wireless. If you're still using one of the big wireless providers in 2019, you know, Verizon, AT&T comes to mind, you might be just wondering, you know, it might be time to ask yourself just what exactly you're paying for, right? Because you're paying for expensive retail stores, inflated prices, hidden fees. You know, basically, they're going to run everything they can right straight to your billing because they know you'll pay $2 here, $4 there. Pretty soon, you're just trying to figure out how your phone just got so expensive, which is why you should be checking out Mint Mobile. They provide the same premium network coverage you're used to, but at a fraction of the cost because everything is online. No stores to pay for, no giant marketing infrastructure that's weighing down every bill you pay. They save on retail locations. They save on overhead. They pass the savings directly to you. I have been tapering my family off, actually. As smaller children have entered the cell phone realm in my family, I've actually been moving them on to companies like Mint. And I'm actually going to move my wife's phone over to Mint. It's exciting, right? It's cool. Mint Mobile makes it easy. You cut your wireless bill down to $15 a month. You get unlimited nationwide talk, unlimited nationwide text, and you don't have to pay for, quote, unlimited data, which is not actually unlimited, but you don't have to pay for data you don't use, right? You got plans with 3, 8, or 12 gigabytes of 4G LTE data, so they're not giving you some crufty 2G or 3G stuff that moves so slow you can't do anything useful with it. And you can use your phone with any Mint Mobile plan, keep your same phone number along with all of your existing contacts. It's nice. And it's really, really affordable. $15 a month for unlimited text and unlimited calling. And you can choose how much data you have, right? My data needs may be a bit beyond what the average Mint user might be. But, right, if you pay $130 a month for your phone bill, which is not actually unusual if you have an older plan, you could save $1,260 a year, $105 a month, right? I'm going to throttle that down. Let's say I pay $80 a month on my phone bill because, you know, you've been around. You just kept going. You're using 9 to 12 gigabytes of data each month. And, wow, you'd save up $666 a year. You'd be saving $55 a month. That's a big deal. Ditch your old wireless bill. Start saving with Mint Mobile to get your new wireless plan for just $15 a month and get the plan shipped to your door for free. Go to mintmobile.com/twitch. mintmobile.com/twitch. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/twych. We want to thank Mint Mobile for their support of This Week in Computer Hardware and for making cell phone ownership a bit more affordable. Man, if you've never dug through some of the charges on your cell phone, that can really fluff your fur. Man, if you open up a link to TechMeme right now, which is a wonderful news aggregator, and you search for MacBook Pro, you'll basically find out that all the big MacBook Pro reviews are hitting, right? 12-inch MacBook, is gone. The MacBook Air is gone. The MacBook Pro 13 inch, the 2019 two port version is out. There are, of course, if you're looking at buying one, you know, I have, it's frustrating because they still really haven't fixed that keyboard. So, you know, keyboard reliability is still a question mark. Battery life is average, which is probably, if you work with a lot of people that are on Windows machines, where battery life is getting more and more impressive, that's got to be a little annoying. You know, there's a new MacBook Air with True Tone display, and price on that is down to $1,099. You know, and the base MacBook Pro, again, with the new processors, they get Touch ID, Touch Bar, and True Tone. And that starts at, I want to say, the 13-inch MacBook Pro at $1,200. So overall, things are good. You know, the butterfly mechanism that they've moved to in the MacBook Air is gone. And in the 2020 MacBook Pro, next year's MacBook Pro, they are supposed to be going to the new scissor switch keyboard, not Swizzer Sitch.
Finally,
you know, the one that didn't have any problems, and they just started to a blanket policy of replacing everybody's keyboard. So, you know, and that's coming out from an article by Ming-Chi Kao, or a report, I should say, that Ming-Chi Kao did, that Apple would have a new keyboard design, and 95 Mac is a great write-up on that. Based on scissor switches, offering durability and longer key travel, starting with the 2019 MacBook Air. And I am quoting Benjamin Mayo over 95 Mac on that. And that makes me wonder. I realize I didn't check to see if iFixit had a teardown of the MacBook Air. And nope, it looks like they are still at the 2018 MacBook Air. Oh, let me just double check. I love the teardowns. MacBook Pro 13, two Thunderbolt port 2019. I don't see the MacBook Air yet. Okay, I just wanted to check.
I await that teardown.
Repairability score for the MacBook Pro 13 inch is 2 out of 10. So,
and they don't like those glued in batteries very much, do they?
No, they also don't like soldered in RAM, and also the fact the MacBook Pro. Oh, if you're thinking about buying a MacBook Pro, buy all the storage you need, because they've soldered the storage to the motherboard.
But that's, yep. I mean, that's like an ultrabook thing. It's par for the course. There's a lot of thin lights, soldered memory.
But they used to. I mean, it was soldered storage, but at least it was a possibility. Yeah, it is what it is. It is what it is, man. Amazon declared Prime Day its biggest shopping event in history, and I just wanted to point this out because Prime Day. We were talking about this again in pre-show. Prime Day was nuts this year because it seemed like everybody had sort of a tag along on Prime Day. Everybody from like the people I buy my backpacks from, goruck.com, who make a fantastic, pricey, but amazing backpack, which I try to buy on sale. Newegg had deals. It was amazing. It wasn't just technology. It wasn't just Amazon, but dozens of companies, probably hundreds, thousands of companies tagged along on Prime Day. But Amazon themselves said Prime Day was their Prime Day, or the 2 days of Prime Day. Maybe that's helps, right? Because there's 2 days of Prime Day versus, you know, the combined sales of Cyber Monday and Black Friday, it beat the combined sales of Cyber Monday and Black Friday. And it was also interesting that around this time, the EU announced that they were going to be doing some investigations around Amazon. But you know, these are crazy numbers, right? So 175 million items this year compared to 100 million items last year. Amazon said, quotes Business Insider, top sellers in the U.S. included the Lifestraw personal water filter, Instant Pot Duo 60, and 23andMe Health and Ancestry kits. Instant Pot was like 50% off. You know, there were some big sales. And yeah, it's also should be pointed out that they made the event 48 hours this year instead of 36 hours. People are starting to look for it and wait for it and jump on it. There were some amazing deals on Anker batteries, actually. That was something that was kind of crazy. I was also laughing This is a really great quote from Haley Peterson at Business Insider. Prime members purchased more than 100,000 lunchboxes, 100,000 laptops, 200,000 TVs, 300,000 headphones, 350,000 luxury beauty products, 400,000 pet products, 650,000 household cleaning supplies, and more than 1 million toys. One of the big sellers was Life Straw, the personal water filter. It's basically, you know, you stick it into a puddle and you can slurp clean water through the Life Straw. They sold 200,000 of those in 48 hours, along with 150,000 Crest 3D white professional effects white strips kits. So
take that, shiny take that QVC.
And bailout bag water straws, Life Straws were pretty big. And of course,
they also trust those, by the way. We talk about this.
Life Straw.
Do you trust the Life Straw?
I do.
Okay.
There's something, you know, the technology is kind of fascinating. The thing I really want is there is an amazing, now you've got me going to REI.com because I never remember the name of it. there's a lot of pretty incredible water filter technology right now. Sawyer makes some good stuff. The one I'm in love with is MSR has this amazing filter where it, as you pump the water through the filter, it actually cleans the filter with every stroke of the pump, which if you've ever had to backwash a filter, a dirty filter to clean it, there it is, the MSR Guardian Purifier. That is a really, really amazing way to clean water. It's pretty slick. But yeah, the Life Straw stuff, it's fascinating. You know, there's also some pretty crazy, if you start searching about Life Straws, people also ask, can Life Straw filter urine? While the Life Straw may remove all parasites and bacteria, it does nothing about salt. It cannot be used to make ocean water or other salt water drinkable. And since urine typically has a high salt level, it's going to be like drinking from a salt shaker. It's still going to taste like pee no matter what. So basically, Life Straw filters down to 2 microns. That's going to take almost all bacteria and protozoa out of the water. That said, right, you know, it's, you know, you don't want to, like, if you go to a tailing pool on a mine that has that incredible iridescent sheen, that means it's basically full of heavy metals and other toxics, things. It's not going to filter out heavy metals. So, you know, if you have clear water in a stream and you're worried about like Giardia and stuff like that, you know, you should be pretty good. If you're in a third, or I should say, if you're in a country where waterborne viruses are a big deal, it could be a problem, i.e. certain parts of the world. So that's a whole nother. Yeah, that's an interesting thing because viruses, I think, will slip through that filter. So, you know, if waterborne viruses become a big problem, the Life Straw becomes less useful. That MSR Guardian Purifier, that actually is supposed to remove viruses, bacteria, protozoa, particulate, HEPA, E. coli, Giardia, Cryptosporidium. So, you know, it's, it depends on how nasty a place you're going, I guess, would be a way of putting it. I also like the fact that a lot of the Life Straw sales have come with donations to countries which could use help cleaning their water. Yeah, there it is. For every Life Straw product purchase, a school child in need receives a safe drinking water for an entire school year, which is cool. You know, I will say it's not the most comfortable way to drink water, to be like out of a stream, but it's there. That's why I like a lot of the, I have a bunch of the Sawyer stuff, which allows you to create kind of a drip bucket, or to basically filter it into a storage device or bag. This, however, is not technology, but I find Life Straws fascinating, obviously, and water purification. Speaking of the EU and investigations, they find Qualcomm €242 million, for, quote, abusing its market dominance in 3G baseband chipsets. Qualcomm sold below cost with the aim of forcing its competitor Icera out of the market. This is illegal under EU antitrust rules. So, you know, this is not particularly shocking. This has certainly been something that's gone on in lots of parts of technology for approximately forever. I don't know if 242 million euros is going to hurt Qualcomm, but it's certainly not going to help. It's certainly a much more dramatic fine than, say, Facebook gets for doing terrible things. But I thought it was interesting to see that happen. And I'm kind of curious if that's going to impact. Well, I was going to say, you know, Qualcomm and how people compete with them, or if they can compete with them. But the truth is there's not a whole lot of competing with Qualcomm at this point in any of a number of areas, which is a gross oversimplification, but it's that kind of subject. What's going on with Gears 5?
Well, it's coming. And if you pre-ordered it, or, you know, if you have an Xbox Live subscription, you can get the tech demo. The beta is out. Mm-hmm. I have not had a chance to look at this yet. Be kind of a fun thing to do a performance preview on and see what the real world kind of system load is going to be for gamers on PC. But it's in the Windows Store. You can get this if you have, like I said, if you pre-ordered it. It's not just a freely available standalone benchmark. Kind of what I was hoping for when I heard there was going to be a Gears 5 tech preview coming. We had brand new Radeon drivers come out about 24, 48 hours ago, and that was one of the big things it was coming out to support. So if, just as a PSA, if you happen to be an Xbox Live subscriber or if you've pre-ordered the game on PC, you can download this beta now. There's a multiplayer demo. You can kind of see what the system is going to do, or what the game is going to do to your system, I should say.
Will it abuse it? Will it terrify it? Will it run squealing in the dark? I don't know what that's all about. You and I have been kind of searching for low-profile coolers to feed my obsession with little tiny PC cases with really powerful CPUs inside. And one of the challenges is the most common one, which is the Noctua. As I reach down and grab it and pull it up, because really, who doesn't want to see a Noctua L9i again? The NHL 9i, this is pretty much the most common one out there. It is fringe for some of the faster processors as they approach 100 watts. In theory, there's the L9A, which offers a little bit more thermal capacity, but those are as scarce as hen's teeth now. In fact, the only place I can find those for sale is on eBay, and for a considerable price over the cost of an L9i, which, you know, and given how vague Noctua is about the sort of cooling capacity of the devices, it's, instead of giving you sort of an estimated wattage or a TDP for the cooler, they basically have processor recommendations, and the processor recommendations are kind of like, okay if you have great case cooling, not recommended. Which makes it, you know, and since, you know, this one is okay with good case cooling, but the other one isn't, and they all kind of peter out about 100-105 watts. I'm excited about this. It's a ID Cool 57mm 130 watt low profile cooler, and they had another one that was even more kind of impressive. If you're kind into insane, low-profile coolers.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so 57 millimeters is pretty damn impressive for what they're claiming is up to 130 watts of cooling potential. And it's one of those larger, it looks like one of the Scythe coolers. It's kind of the folded over design. And Noctua has something like this too, but this is really, really low profile, very thin fan. I think it's a 12 or 13 millimeter thick fan. But they also have, that's the ID Cool, what is that, the ID 50? They have one that is only 30 millimeters in height total, including the fan, that they say will do up to 100 watts.
That's pretty impressive.
That looks like,
I mean,
like
that's
that,
actually kind of amazing.
Yeah, it looks like the Cryorig C7, which only ever claimed, I think, to go up to 100 or to 95 watts, but a squashed version of it. Like there, it's a thinner version of that same idea, that it's the folded over heat pipes. It's direct contact. So hopefully they've milled that really, really flat. Just so ridiculous. I mean, it's in the picture, of course, it's about the height of a standard DIMM, and it's shorter than a DIMM that has heat sinks on it. So no clearance issues there, as long as your case supports, you know, a standard DDR4 DIMM.
Yeah.
If it doesn't, then what are you doing to yourself? If it doesn't even support, I guess, okay, in the half height stuff, like the thin mini ITX, you're not using standard DIMMs, you're using SO-DIMMs. And you're at sub 30 millimeters sometimes. I think I had to go with like a 26 or 28 millimeter cooler years ago when I did a thin mini ITX case review. But, you know, 30 millimeters, that'll fit in almost anything. You should get one. You should get one and pair it up with a 3800X. See what happens. But 3700X, it's only 65 watts, Patrick.
You know, I'm good for that. 65 watts. I could overclock with that. And that, you know, again, that's the kind of 3700, 3800 numbers I'm curious about. Because 3700X, you jump from 65 watts to 100 watts. I will contact them. Yeah. As far as I know, they are not for sale yet. But, yeah, that would leave me a healthy 17 millimeters of space above it.
And think about this. You could take that extra space. Yes, put a big fat 25 millimeter fan on there. But if you look at the specs, this might be a deal breaker. It's like the Silverstone Argon Series AR11 that I reviewed. It gets its amazing cooling potential by just throwing the highest RPMs imaginable. So this is 30, well, I'm exaggerating, but 3,600 RPMs.
Well, that's the rated speed, 800 to 3,600 RPM.
Right, but I'm sure at that 100 watt level, it's just screaming. Because that Silverstone, it's great. It's very quiet. It's quieter than an Intel stock cooler until you put something above 65 watts in your system, and then it goes up to 3,000 RPM and it's 50 decibels. So
that's irritating. Well, okay. I guess it's 3,700 for me for the near future. I'm just going to make a brief mention of this. And we can, no. I was laughing. You know what? We'll close on the Elon Musk story. Tell me about the $79 Magic headphone stand, which I will point out is not even remotely near the most expensive headphone stand I've seen. Because once you get into audiophiles with $3,000, $4,000 headphones, they'll spend some staggering coin on a headphone stand. But true, Cooler Master, I would assume you're getting a lot hand, for $79.
Look at the bottom. That's a headphone has RGBs on the stand.
Can I link them to my motherboard?
I think so. I haven't plugged this into a computer yet. It works with their software. And I haven't had a lot of experience with Cooler Master peripherals yet, so this is my first taste. And they sent along these headphones to go with it. And these are just standard two-channel analog headphones. The interesting thing about this stand, which on its own merit is, you know, it's a nice headphone stand. It's not crazy. It's got a big, heavy base with a nice rubber pad on the bottom of it so it doesn't move around. The actual arm that holds up the headphones is made out of aluminum. And it has this, as I bump the microphone, has the ability to wrap the cord around the back, so there's built-in storage. But this is also a little DAC headphone amplifier and USB hub and wireless charger for your phone all at the same time. It's trying to do everything it possibly can within its form factor. So this plugs into your computer with USB 3. It gives you then two USB 3 ports. It gives you a 3.5 millimeter headphone jack. When you plug your headphones into it, using their software, it gives you the option of doing simulated 7.1 channel surround effects, so turning them into gaming headphones or turning stereo gaming headsets into surround gaming headsets. And in addition to those simulated surround effects, you also have the ability to drop your phone down on top of it, and then it starts charging your phone. Yeah, and it's 7.5 watts for iPhone and 10 watts for the Android phones that support the faster wireless charging standard. So, and look, it's glowing green because it's charging the phone as we speak.
So it's a headphone stand. It's a USB 3 hub. It's a DAC. It's a 7.1 gaming enhancement. And it's a key charger. And don't call yet, it's also an LED lighting system to maximize the amount of LED lighting on your desktop. All for the low price of $79. I'm kind of curious what DAC they're using and how being stuffed in with all of that USB hub stuff impacts its performance.
Should I tear this apart and report back on this later?
Only if you're done with your
glue. Wonder how much glue is holding this base plate on to find out what DAC is in there. I don't see any screws.
Probably not that much.
Yeah. I don't want to destroy it. I'll review it first, then I'll destroy it.
I'm kind of curious who's 7.1. I'm like over here looking at this and just giggling. I'm kind of curious who's 7.1 system service processing they're using. Okay, so they use their own software to control the LEDs. You can set the distance and rotation of the 7.1 surround sound speaker. So basically, it's all seems to be their proprietary stuff. So, interesting. I'll be very curious to hear what you think of the quality of music coming out of it. That's kind of the big one. I joke a lot about, in fact, I was joking on All About Android this week about how we all really want a jack in the back of our necks. And that's really, you know, and the information will be in front of our eyes. We can be completely taken over by social media and the resulting depression. Apparently, by the way, there was a study in Montreal. Video games don't cause emotional problems for teenagers. Social media does. Why am I not shocked? But this is a little fringe for us, but Elon Musk's Neuralink wants sewing machine-like robots to wire brains to the internet. I just want to lay that out there. John Markoff's the writer on this one. and the picture you're looking at if you're watching the video is the Neuralink system shown in an artist rendering. A small computer behind the ear would be attached via small wires to threads that extend into the brain. So Elon Musk has invested $100 million in Neuralink, and they've taken, quote, baby steps that could lead to working with human subjects, quote, as soon as the second quarter of next year. So, you know, I also like Mr. Markoff's understated observation. Quote, the company claims the system will eventually be capable of reading and writing vast amounts of information. But as with many of Mr. Musk's other adventures, like spaceships or futuristic tunnels, one of the biggest challenges may be for his scientists to match his grand vision. So. this is pretty... This is pretty Neuromancer. This is pretty William Gibson.
Yeah.
And I'm a huge fan. If you keep scrolling down, you'll see a rather terrifying looking machine that bears a strong resemblance to something I've seen used to test fuel injectors on diesel engines, bred with an electron microscope. The threads would be inserted into the brain by a robotic system that works in a manner akin to a sewing machine. A needle would grab each thread by a small loop and then be inserted into the brain by the robot. So, you know, just wanted to lay that out there. I probably won't be alive by the time this becomes a functioning, you know, product you get installed at Walmart, but...
You're lucky. You're lucky there.
Yeah. It's kind of an interesting, I don't know. It's kind of fascinating. Yeah. This company has received $158 million in funding. It has 90 employees. You know, it's an interesting thought, right? You know, could you use this to help amputees move artificial limbs? Could it help with, you know, processing, neurological processing for seeing, or help with speech issues? Surgeons would have to drill holes through the head. And then in the future, though, they hope to use laser beams to pierce the skull. So early versions, surgeons drill holes and then they start threading. They're going to be working with neurosurgeons at Stanford University. I just found this deeply fascinating, you know. And one of the advisors in Neuralink is Jamie Henderson, professor of neurosurgery at Stanford. And he works with treatment of epilepsy and deep brain stimulation. That's kind of his thing. So I am kind of fascinated by this. You know. It's kind of crazy. You know, they have it running on a rat with 1,500 electrodes knitted into the rat's brain. So, yeah, I just want to lay that out there. Computer, brain, interface, drilling holes in your skull, Sebastian. Are you feeling it? Are you feeling it? Yeah.
I'm right there. I'm definitely feeling that close up. That was nice. That was nice work. It you know, all I think about, because I'm a well-adjusted, normal person, is the episode of Star Trek: The Next Generation where Barclay becomes the Enterprise computer by having all of these things connect to his brain in the holodeck, and then, you know, he just takes over because he becomes so smart. He's smarter than the computer, right. And he finds it inefficient and intolerable.
Always awkward. Always painful. Always terrifying. Oh, my goodness. This week, Computer Hardware is the show you've been listening to. We rarely get into science fiction concepts of knitting computers into your brain, but today we did because Elon Musk's company, Neuralink, made the announcement. The conversations about desktop processors and graphics cards and laptops and phones, it's more of the bulk of the conversation. If this is your first episode, you might not realize that we don't sit here whispering about drilling holes in our skulls most of the time. Just wanted to get that out there.
Well, we do, but offline and to each other.
Yes.
Late at night.
In the privacy of our own homes. Yes. Connected via the internet over VPN while wearing tinfoil hats. Twit.tv/Twitch is the website. That's TWICH. If you want to get more of Sebastian Peak, I highly recommend you scamper on the internet to PCPer.com and keep an eye on what he's doing. Those are some great reviews of the Ryzen 9 3900X, 3700X, and the new 5700 and 5700XT GPUs. I love it when things become faster for less money, except when I've just bought something that they are faster and less expensive than. And that's just a lifestyle thing. You can find more of me. Well, right now, concentrate on Twitch. Keep an eye on avxl.com. And I hopefully will have a new website launching at the end of this month. That's the rumor, in any case. I just have to finish it. In the meantime, you can follow me at Twitter.com/Patrick Norton is a good way to see what's up with me. In the meantime, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for listening and watching. However you consume the show, we appreciate it. If you got a moment, tell a friend that's into hardware about the show, because we're always looking for more eyeballs and earballs. I guess earballs sounds creepy, or at least weird. Ears, eyes and ears probably would be a normal, rational way of saying that. And again, thank you for listening. With that, I'm Patrick Norton.
And I'm Sebastian Peak.
We'll see you next week on Twitch.